Hello, in today's episode of Soul Speak, we will be speaking with a woman who has spent much of her life looking for answers to life's biggest questions. Welcome back to Soul Speak. I am Meg Michelson. Thank you so much for joining me today, for liking, for sharing, for rating, and just for being here in our community, because the people that tune in are the ones that are tending to want to grow and make the world a better place. So thank you so much for being here. Today we are going to have a treat. We're going to speak with a woman named Reverend Rose Hope, who is a beautiful, not only a beautiful woman with a big mission, she really is on a mission to elevate how others think and others live. So, of course, she's a great fit for right here on Soul Speak. She's delved into many questions about why am I here? What's the meaning of life? And how do I find happiness? And there's so many of us out there, of course, with those same questions. So, Rose, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Meg. I'm so delighted to be with you today.
Thank you. And I'm so really very grateful you're here. Last week, we dove into how we can safely navigate anger. And of course, anger is one of many emotions we can get caught up in. There are many emotions, not just anger. Some we enjoy, some we don't. Some wreak havoc, some enhance our life. And today with Rose and her journey on living a life of being a human with that beautiful, mystical, soulful side, which is, of course, waking up and living in balance. When I was listening to one of your podcasts, Rose, you were talking about going into the root cause. And I'm wondering if you'll talk to us about that, because in my belief, that root cause is so important to help us understand our emotions and understand possibly why something like anger is simmering under the surface.
I love talking about going deep, to the deep dive. And, you know, I think what happens in most of our experience here in this human body that we're in is that we get caught up in all of the extra layers and the conditioning and the programming. And we oftentimes struggle to find, well, what is this really about? You know, when we have an emotion about something, it's not because of that particular thing. I'll give you an example. I was a little cranky with my partner a couple of weeks ago, and I responded with, you know, resentment and with anger, but it wasn't about that particular moment, whatever behavior he had done that upset me. It was actually about layers and layers deep below the surface about something that had happened to me when I was a child. And so there's this opportunity for us to invoke this sense of curiosity about why certain emotions are showing up and allow us to kind of dig a bit deeper and see what is this really about? What's really actually going on here? And when we can do that, we can get to the bottom of things, and that can allow us to move that energy, allow us to alchemize that energy. In other words, shifting that energy of maybe anger, resentment, grief, shame, guilt, whatever it might be, whatever that emotion is. And now we have this opportunity, this beautiful opportunity to look at that and say, ah, no wonder I responded the way that I did. No wonder I felt the way I did. And I love this power of no wonder, because it gives us some grace so that we're not beating up on ourselves. Because, you know, when we have an emotion, oftentimes we then go into this self-criticism, beating up on ourselves of how we responded or reacted to whatever the situation was. And then we get lost in that too. And then that blocks us from really looking deeper and saying, okay, what is this really about? So this beautiful opportunity for us to really uncover, there's an unpacking, if you will, that is in inviting us in whenever we have an emotional response to anything, to invite us in to start peeling back the layers and say, I wonder what there is in this for me. I wonder what the learning is in this for me. Because there is such growth that comes when we're willing to say, what's in that for me? What's the learning? What's the understanding for myself, for me to be able to move forward? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, So I, you know, there's this aspect of peeling back the layers that I want to bring to the surface, because I think it's also very easy for us, Meg, to judge whatever emotion we're feeling. And what if we don't have to look at shame as a bad thing or anger as a bad thing, right? You know, and so that invitation to look at just the emotion as simply as a neutral perspective, instead of condemning feeling a certain way, we can look at it with a neutral perspective. And that allows us also to then uncover, okay, there's something more in this for me as well.
Absolutely. Because oftentimes we go through life not unpacking. We just keep packing and packing because we're so busy. Our society tends to lean towards busyness. And then we can pretend things are fine, and then we can't. And so then it comes out, like you said, with your partner sideways. And it's not about that. And so you're going into wonder. Absolutely. That's something I do and teach others, is staying in that face of wonder as often as we can. Because otherwise we do the tasks, we do the tasks, we do the tasks. And we can even tell ourselves it doesn't matter, right?
Of course.
But it always matters, because it's always stuck in there somewhere.
Yes. So, and I was so good at keeping things packed. Like, that was like, I was a pro at burying all the things, whether it was grief or shame or whatever it was. And I would bury it, and I would, you know, get out there and put my brave face on and face the world. But what I uncovered in my process and my journeys was that was not serving me anymore. I couldn't hide from those deeper aspects of myself, those shadow aspects, oftentimes we refer to them as, because there's such gifts in those too. Yeah.
That's right. We make it wrong. And yet, as you said earlier, it's not wrong. It's just part of being a human. And there's beauty in humanness, and there's challenge in humanness. And when you're helping a client unpack, can you tell us what that looks like to get to the root cause? Give us some sort of an example.
Sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of ways that we can start going into that root cause. And the first one is inviting a conversation with that energy. So I teach my clients to build a relationship to whatever it is they're feeling. So rather than compartmentalizing it and shoving it away, I say, no, let's hold space for it. And I go as far as to actually hold my hands, and I encourage my clients to do that. And I hold that anger, and I hold that grief, whatever that emotion is that I'm feeling, I hold it like as if I'm holding this sweet little bird in my hands. And I begin to have a conversation with it. So for me, I like to visualize it. I like to feel into it. So I'll say, hi, grief. And usually I'm bawling my eyes out at this time, right? Like, if it's grief coming up, surely I'll be crying. And I say, oh, I'm so upset that you're here again. But I know you're here to show me something. I know you're teaching me something. I know you're growing me. Tell me what I need to know. And in inviting that conversation, something really beautiful happens to that energy itself. So that energy of grief might be dense before I have the conversation. And as I speak to it, it says, oh my gosh, they see me, they hear me. And right away, that emotion starts to become lighter for us. It becomes a bit more fluid for us to be able to then receive more information and insight from that. So that is one of my big invitations, is to start opening that dialogue with that energy or that emotion itself. And once we start to do that, then we kind of loosen it up. It gives us a little bit of space. And then what happens is, whether you know it or not, that energy is going to give you information. So it might not happen consciously in that moment, but most certainly that information will come through you throughout the day, or through reflection and journaling, or whatever your process might be. But there is an opportunity there for you to then ask those questions. You know, we talked about that wonder, that curiosity, and being willing to say, is this really about this particular experience, or does this go deeper?
And thank you, because that's so important. And it goes back to, is this the reaction I want to have going forward? Is this something I want to shift? Or am I just going to be okay with continuing this reaction? Because we want to have that hope to change, right? In order to bring about change, because it takes an intention. And an intention is so important in our daily living, certainly.
Yes. It really is the will to change, I think, too, even taking that further, not just the hope to change, but the will to change. And one of the greatest gifts that we were given is the power of free will. And many of us have forgotten about the power of free will, because that ego mind, or the EGO mind, the ego mind, or the logical mind, in metaphysics, we call it the false mind. That part of us has taken over for many of us. You know, thousands and thousands of years ago, it was like run from the predators, and it knew to keep us safe. But now the ego starts to overstep its boundaries. It comes in and it says, oh, you don't know what you're talking about there, or you don't know how to do that. It brings about all of these negative aspects of us, but its intention is to keep us safe. However, nobody's ever put boundaries in place. Most of us haven't. And so there's this beautiful opportunity for us to also build the relationship with that ego aspect of ourselves, that false self, and start nurturing that aspect. So then now the ego can have its role to keep us from, you know, doing things that will risk our lives, but it's not going to intercept every time we want to go out of our comfort zone. Every time we do want to make a change, that ego will get quieter and quieter simply by starting to build a relationship. Again, it goes back to building these relationships. So having this conversation now with this part of ourselves, I like to even give my ego a name. And that's one of my greatest tricks that I love to do, because it helps me to separate myself from myself. You know, we are these multidimensional beings, and we forget that we have these aspects within us, and that we actually get to control the ego mind, not the other way around. And yet most of us are letting it run the show. And so in creating this beautiful dialogue and this relationship, I lovingly hold space for my ego when it needs to be there. And I lovingly invite it to step aside when maybe it shouldn't be there. And so it's this beautiful bond and connection, so that that way, when I'm making decisions, they're aligned decisions. When I'm allowing myself to go deeper into the root cause, my ego oftentimes is the storage unit for those root causes. And so now we can really start to build even a deeper relationship and say, okay, ego, where is this really coming from? Right? Yeah.
And then we're going into just that unraveling, that unpacking. And like you said earlier, it might not happen in that moment. You know, when we have taken a while to build a pattern, it takes us a while to reformat that pattern. And rarely is there is an aha. You can have an aha and have an instantaneous shift of mind. However, our body's a little slower. So remember, then we have to practice the new way. And we practice the new way by having that intention, using our free will, and knowing it is going to take practice. It's practice. So it to is. Be kind to ourselves, to give ourselves grace, as you're saying. Absolutely. And part of what you're bringing up, which is, again, such, and this was on one of your podcasts, and this is another vital component of being a healthy human, is breathing. Now, how do we use breath work? So how have you used breath work to support your body and your mind?
Well, you know, one of my practices is about weaving spirituality into my daily life. For a really long time, I thought spirituality meant that I had to have like an hour of meditation in the morning, and then I had to do my journal reflection at night. And I put all this pressure on myself to show up in this spiritual, quote unquote, way. And really what I discovered is that it's not about necessarily even that. It's about allowing this weaving in. And so breath has become an ally for me throughout the day, not just, oh, I'm going to go do breath work tonight. I'm going to do my yoga or my meditation. Now it has become this interwoven thread. And this has been such a gift for me, because I haven't felt like, oh my God, I have to put pressure on myself to be this certain persona of spirituality, that in fact, it can be embodied through my day. And one of the ways to do that is to weave breath in through my day. And so even if we just take a moment right now and invite the listeners to just take a moment to take in a beautiful breath through your nose, letting out with a sigh if you wish to, and just taking that little moment as you're moving through the day, especially when it's busy, especially when it's chaotic and the kids are, you know, having a fight, or, you know, you've got 10 million things on your to-do list, you know? And so this breath becomes just a way of being. But there's also different things we can do to really build this relationship with breath. I love to imagine that when I'm breathing in God or creator or source energy, whatever your belief system might be around divine. And so I love to even just say, I'm breathing God into me, allowing that connection. And that also takes it a bit deeper for me as I move through my day, because it reminds me that divine is my supply, that divine is my doer, that it's not all on me. I don't have to carry the weight of the world on my shoulders, which is how I spent most of my life feeling. And so this idea of tuning into that divine frequency when we are taking that breath, even throughout the day, it shifts everything. It's almost like I feel like I'm being moved into a whole nother trajectory in my day just by that one thing.
Just the breath. And that beautiful breath is, that's a fifth chakra, which is the throat and the jaw and the tops of the shoulders and the neck. Mm. And this is also the area of surrender. So every time we are taking a breath and releasing, we're actually on that beautiful subconscious level, we're surrendering. The more we do it, the easier it becomes to integrate into our daily practice. And as Rose was saying, you know, it's part of her daily practice. It doesn't just automatically happen. It is the conscious connection of, this is what I want to bring into my day.
Yes.
And then I'm going to do that. And sometimes I'm not going to do it great. And sometimes I am, but I'm going to be able to get back, because this is something that we can all do and it's free.
It is.
It doesn't cost us anything, but it actually expands our whole physical being into healthier ways.
Yeah.
And you know, as Rose said, you can incorporate with inhaling and bringing in spirit. Absolutely. And then the exhale, you could even say, I surrender.
Yes.
And just allow the flow, the inhale and the exhale. And like you said earlier, Rose, with sometimes it takes more than, you know, it's more than one time to get anywhere, right? We have to unpack over time. Same thing with learning how to surrender with your breath, turning it over. Sometimes we have to breathe more than once, because our adrenaline can spike right back up to the thought in a nanosecond, because our mind works that fast.
Yes, our mind does work that fast. But the good news is our heart and our intuition moves even faster. And so this is why it's so powerful when we can build that relationship with our thinking mind, with that ego mind as well, because it slows things down so that we're not reacting, but rather we're responding. You know, our thoughts are what creates our emotions. And so if we want to really go back into that root, you know, we go back to the thinking that's causing the emotion, right? And once we get to that thinking piece again, now all of a sudden it's like all of these answers can come up. Oh my gosh, I feel this way about this because of this happening to me. And I feel this way about that because of this. And so we start to connect the dots and we start to put the puzzle pieces together. And the beautiful thing about breath is that it creates that space. So it creates that little bit of space for us to not get wrapped up in the hamster wheel. Because we're so good at that too, right? I create all sorts of stories in my mind and I get caught in the hamster wheel. But if I allow myself to just take that breath, oftentimes it gives me a bit of buffer time. And that buffer time is just enough for me to see the truth of the situation, or for me to be open to whatever the teaching is, whatever the learning, the lesson, the value in that experience is. And I had a coach once who said, well, do 100 breaths for 100 days. And this actually worked really well for me to build back my relationship with breath, because I was quite disconnected from my breath for a time. I was in fight or flight, you know, people pleasing, overachiever. And so I was quite disconnected from my breath. And she said, you want to build a relationship? She said, do 100 breaths for 100 days. And it was a really fun experience for me to build that relationship. So it would only take me 10 minutes and I would focus on that breath and I would breathe in and out and I would count. And I did 100 breaths for 100 days. And that actually really helped to anchor in my relationship with my breath and the power that it held for me. Because what I noticed in my day to day is that I felt more energized. I felt like I had more capacity to manage the things. And so that was a wonderful Kickstarter for me. So I just wanted to share that with the audience, because that little challenge, even if you did 10 days, 100 breaths for 10 days, you know, but create a little challenge for yourself if you really want to lean into building that relationship.
That's a beautiful idea. And I want to add to that. And remember, listeners, that we're not talking about a rapid breath, because 100 rapid breaths may not be what you're looking for. So this is slow breath. And if that's it's correct. Intimidating to start with 100, start with 10. Do 10 for 10 days. And then, you know, so you get to build up at your level, because when we haven't been consciously breathing for a while, it is hard to get back. You feel a little panic. Like you don't have time, or you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it right. So wherever you're at, find that number and start there. That's beautiful, Rose. And then you can build up to 100 breaths.
Yes.
100 days. Or maybe you can start there. Just try not to shame yourself because you're not at 100 breaths. That's okay too.
Exactly, Meg. And you know what? I would find myself, I'd be at like breath 30 something, and I'd be like, oh my God, what number am I on? You know, and that would happen all the time. And I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to guess. And I would just, you know, I would guess and I would just keep going. So again, being gentle with yourself is so key in all of this, because it's very easy for us to be our own worst critics. You know, Gandhi has a quote. He says, I will not let others walk through my mind with their dirty feet. And I add to that and I say, I will not allow myself to walk through my mind with my dirty feet
either. Beautiful. Beautiful.
So and I that's think that's an intention. Yeah.
So you're setting an intention. And with our breath work, we can say, what do you want different in your life? And what's one area that you're feeling it's a little dead or flat, or you're lacking passion? Which really brings me to the next question. In your, I believe it was your first podcast, you spoke to an audience about being a zombie. And maybe that was 4 years ago. I don't remember, but I so agree and love that, because when people are going through the motions of life and not living with purpose or passion, I call them the walking dead. They become part of the walking dead, which is the zombie. And that is a lot of people. And all of us have moments, or maybe even a day, when we might feel like we are not living our full self. So it's okay. However, if that's the norm, so if we could back up, Rose, because I'd love the listeners to hear your story, your personal journey that led you back into a life, because you now take risks, right? You live a more purpose-driven life.
Yes, I really do. You know, there's a big difference between being driven and being drawn. And I spent most of my life being driven. I was driven by achievement. I was driven by what people thought. And now I let myself be led. I let myself be drawn. I let spirit guide me as I go. But it's taken a lot of practice, and it continues to take practice for me too. So when I was 5 years old, I actually died. I had a near-death experience. I choked on one of those round Jawbreaker candies. Do you remember those round hard candies? And my dad said to me, he shook his hand and said, go sit down before you choke. And I went to go sit down. And sure enough, I took a breath and I choked. So when I choked, my dad came running over, started doing the Heimlich maneuver, but that Jawbreaker would not come out. And so I went limp in my dad's arms. And in that moment, I had an out-of-body experience. I remember hovering above my body, my dad working on me frantically, my mom running to go to the phone for help, my sister peeking around the corner. But I felt completely held. I felt peace. I felt love. I just remember looking at everything below and not being overly attached to it. Now, in my five-year-old little body, I didn't understand really what had happened at that time, but my dad did what you're not supposed to do, by the way. He used his thumb, pushed against the inside of my throat, and was able to pop the Jawbreaker out and get me breathing again. And so I came out of that experience feeling like God gave me a second chance. So I better prove that that was the right decision. So that created this overachiever in me. By grade four, I was the president of the Kids for Saving Earth Club because I felt like I needed to have purpose. So even at 9 years old, I was already starting leadership and trying to do something to save the world. I felt like the world was on my shoulders in a way. And that piled up and piled up and piled up. And so after that experience, I was raised in a very loving Catholic home. And so after that experience, I would start to have premonitions. I would start to have very lucid dreams. My intuition was very strong. But because I don't think mom really knew what to do with me, I just kind of kept it to myself. You know, there were things that I would share and then she would just say, okay, we'll pray about it, you know? And I'm so grateful that I had prayer as a tool because it really did help me in that time. But I stuffed a lot of those gifts away, those intuitive type of gifts. Now, fast forward into my first career, I became an EMT and firefighter. I love that career, but I started to have some interesting things happen. I would feel spirits of people who had passed in my care, and I would feel their energy. And I really thought, I'm losing my mind. So maybe this profession is not one I can stay in. But I was still this overachiever. So then I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go into dentistry. And then I ended up teaching in health sciences, which I loved teaching, but I was still playing this I'll be happy when game. Have you ever played that game before? It's a losing game, by the way. I'll be happy when this degree is done. I'll be happy when I have my family. I'll be happy when. And so that's the game I was playing. And so really struggling in my 20s, in my mid 20s. And then something else happened. I had another near death, believe it or not. So now I'm 26 years old. At the time, I'm teaching at some colleges here in Alberta, Canada. And I had a full constructive knee surgery on my left knee. And so I'm at home recovering from the surgery. Surgery went great, no problem. But something happened afterwards. I had some sort of idiosyncrasy to some of the medication they had given me. And I was hobbling on crutches from one place to another. And I went completely unresponsive. So I hit the ground and I was completely gone from this world. I was in what I can only describe as heaven. It was a very different experience from when I was only 5 years old. Now I'm in this space of light and I can see these beautiful, beautiful colors, these bright orbs of light, colors that I've never seen in this three-dimensional world. They were so vibrant. And the feeling I felt, Meg, was so euphoric. It was so beautiful. It was so real for me in that moment. I felt completely unconditionally loved. And I wanted to stay there. I remember saying to these angels, who I describe these energies of light as angels, I remember saying, I'm staying here. This is amazing. I remember consciously saying that. And I heard in my mind their communication back and they said, you're not staying, you've got work to do. And so I woke up to my brother-in-law staring at me wide-eyed because at the time he lived with me and he was helping me recover. And thankfully he had caught me when I went unresponsive. Now here's what's really profound about this story, because when you have an experience like that, the ego mind comes in and it says, you just had this dream. You don't even know what you're just making this up or whatever. But yet it was so profound. So in the days after, I felt so compelled. I'm like, I have to start telling people about this. Like this was too big of a deal. But again, I felt unsafe to do so. I felt like I would be judged or ridiculed and what have you. So I had a girlfriend come over a few days after. I'm still recovering. And I'm telling my girlfriend, because I feel safe enough with her. I'm saying, I went to the angels. I went to heaven. Here was my experience. Like I'm telling her about this really profound moment I had. And my brother-in-law, who was the one that caught me, overheard me. He was in the other room and he came running into the kitchen and he slammed his hand on the counter and he said, I knew it. I felt the angels too. Wow. So I get goosebumps every time I say that.
How old was your brother then?
He was the same age as me. Yeah, we're the same age. Yeah. And we're still very close to this day. He's still my brother. So he came running in and he says his experience was that he started to panic because he couldn't find my pulse, my breath. And so he was about to call 911. And he said what he felt were these energies as well coming in. And he heard them say in his mind, she's going to be fine. Just wait. And so he waited, he said, only a few more seconds. And he said, I came to with a smile on my face. So he validated that for me, Meg. It was like spirit's way of saying, it's okay to share this story. It's okay to speak this truth. And so that really was a catalyst for me in going into this deeper discovery. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you had these two near deaths and now you've got it figured out. No, it didn't quite go that way, Meg. It took me a little longer because I then now wanted to go back to that heavenly place. So I played the I'll be happy when game even harder. So now I was seeking outside of myself. Oh, okay, now I'm going to achieve this and that's going to bring me that heavenly sense. Or I'm going to have my children and that's going to bring me closer to heaven. So again, I was looking everywhere outside of myself for this piece of heaven, for this happiness, and I could not find it. In fact, I got to a point, Meg, after I had my second child, my son, I was 6 months and I was in deep postpartum depression. And I knew I needed to make some changes, but I didn't know what to do. And the feeling of despair that I had was so deep. And I had decided that leaving this plane would be the only way for me to find heaven at that point. So I had given up on this human existence. And I had decided that this was the best thing for my kids and the best thing for me because I was in such a deep place of pain and feeling like I had failed miserably. You know, like, geez, I had these 2 second chances and I'm still failing. I'm still not happy. I'm doing something wrong. I'm a failure. And I felt this so deep within my spirit. And so as I'm contemplating how I'm going to go about doing this, you know, end of life process, I prayed and I said, okay, God, if this is not the path, show me another one. I demanded it, actually. I said, I can't see another way. And so my prayers were answered in that moment because I had this beautiful spirit come to me and showed me this entire vision of what I needed to do. And it wasn't really anything outside of myself. It was starting to deepen my connection with myself. It was starting to go on this inward journey to walk the path with my soul. And that was where I found heaven.
Thank you for sharing that experience, because I'm sure, regardless of how much time has passed, it still is a feeling and a big one, I'm sure. And I want to have a few comments on that. You know, I really appreciate that you said you wanted to go back to that light. An experience I had years ago, that light was so profound, I couldn't keep it either. And then how do you get back to it? And mine was an awakening state. And other people that I've spoken with that have had near-death experiences, some of them have had that same feeling that when they came back, after they're realizing, wow, that felt way better, this is kind of stinky.
Yes.
And yes. I want that back. I want that mm-hmm. back. You know, absolutely. And what I have come to realize is it's to help us understand there is more to Earth and that we can bring that feeling to Earth in a different way. We can have that feeling and it might be a little different and the colors are definitely not as bright in some ways, but it's our perception too. Now we talk about our mind goes down a lot of rabbit holes and sometimes we can allow our mind, well, hopefully more often than not, to help shape what it is we want.
Yes.
Not become a saboteur in the shadow.
This is so right, Meg, you know, and I think it's very easy for us to get into that sabotaging type of behavior and the seeking behavior outside of ourselves and the willingness to build this relationship with this beautiful aspect of our soul is, oh, it's so heavenly once you start to lean in. And I remember feeling so scared to go in there. I thought, what kind of skeletons am I going to unpack? You know, what am I going to have to face? But what I found is that there's so much grace available to us. Once we start to lean into this aspect of our soul, we find the grace because, again, going back to that wonder, the no wonder I've been showing up this way. No wonder it's been difficult for me. No wonder I've been having trouble to make the changes. And that grace is so brilliant for us. It allows us to continue this beautiful journey inward, and it allows us to tune into that frequency of heaven because it is available to us. It was innately given. The happiness, the joy, all the things that we desire to feel, already innately given to us. And so now we have this beautiful opportunity of unpacking or unwrapping, I like to think of it, as these gifts that we have been bestowed with. We just need to unwrap them. And the unwrapping part can be a little bit messy, but it's so worth it. It's so worth it.
Yes, it's so worth it. And as the more that we choose to lean into spirit and live a daily existence, and again, it doesn't have to be in a monastery. It's part of our drive. When I drive places, I call on the angels. If I need a parking spot up close for some reason, I bring it into my daily living in all regards as much as I can. And sometimes I forget because I'm human. And when we have a profound experience, and you've had multiple profound experiences, that can give us an aha. But as Rose said, it didn't completely save her life in some regards. She still is doing the work that every other human that hasn't had a near-death experience is having. It caused her to feel a little depressed because she didn't know how to access that same feeling. So all of us, you know, that are on this path to live a life that feels brighter and lighter and more awake, how do we take what you have learned, Rose? And if you are willing to speak to our listeners about that, about how do we take that aha that you had, or that big trumpets, you know, being sung by angels, into, can we learn to take those risks to live a healthier, more passionate life without the chorus of angels?
Yes, absolutely. You know, this goes back to our power of free will, you know, and we can simply choose. We can just choose. We don't need to have some big aha, some big epiphany. You don't need to self-induce a near-death experience. You know, you simply can choose to lean into that. And of course, there's lots of different ways to do that. And we've talked about some of them today. We talked about weaving spirituality in. We talked about using that wonder and awe, that curiosity. This is actually a bit of an acronym, the WOW acronym, W being weaving. And now let's talk about the O for a second, because the O is for opportunity. And the invitation is for us to recognize that there's so much opportunity for us in every path we take, in every experience, in every drama or trauma, there's opportunity. And in mysticism, we call this continual expectancy. Have you ever heard of continual expectancy, Meg? So continual expectancy means that I'm not expecting a particular outcome, but I'm expecting that whatever the outcome is exactly for my highest good and the highest good of others. So for example, if I, let's say my daughter played hockey this weekend, so they had this expectation that they were going to win gold, and they're attached to that expectation of winning gold. However, rather than having that expectation, they can just lean into, you know what, we're going to have the best weekend. It's going to show up exactly as we need it to for our highest good, for our growth, and we're just going to go for it and just going to step into that. Rather than being attached to that winning and then feeling the disappointment and the suffering in that. You see, we as human beings create a great deal of suffering, and many of us are actually addicted to suffering, by the way, as well. And again, that's a good no wonder moment to unpack that piece. But the point being around this is that when we come at it from this aspect of continual expectancy, even if it doesn't show up the way I thought it was going to show up, I can trust that there's learning in it, that there's value in it, and that it was for me and my highest good. It's recognizing that there's this divinity at play always. And that divinity knows exactly what it is that we need, even if we don't. Even if our perception of it is that this is a really bad experience, right? divine knows what it is that we need ultimately. So our job is to shift our perspective and to look at the experiences again with a little bit more neutrality, but with this opportunity to say, there's something in this for me. What do I get out of this, even though it didn't show up quite the way I had hoped it would?
Beautiful. And can we let go of that attachment hold so we are open to what's coming next? And with any trauma, whether it's big or small, we can get so stuck on the trauma of it that we're missing out on what's coming our way that would actually be a better life. And so that's so important. You know, when I went through my divorce 14 years ago, it was a devastation to me to get divorced. But so much good has come into my life that wouldn't have had I stayed married. And so it's, we want to be open to whatever that is, we don't know. And that's the surrender. And that's what, as Rose said earlier, why we bring the breath in every day. 100 breaths a day. Beautiful, wise, wise advice. And I have one more question for you. And you had said it briefly about when you had your second near-death experience and you didn't really feel safe talking about it, but you had your friend came over and you talked to her about it. And before I ask the question, I want the listeners to understand, we don't need 20 people that are safe. We can, but for anything big or small, it does help us to share our experiences and not bottle them up. That's why there are groups that are out there for you, or ways you can meet new people if you don't have that yet. Finding those people that you can talk to about these experiences that feel profound, but not always believable, because we all have them on some level. So when you had that experience and you spoke with your friend about it, how did that shift your life? How has you, and even you sharing your story, big or small, how has you not keeping things in helped you in your own journey?
Oh, such a beautiful question, Meg. And I think there's such power in this. You know, I believe that storytelling is a form of medicine. And so when we share our stories and when we listen to the stories of others, we are healing the world. And so when I was finally able to speak to that, it actually unpacked all these other layers, and it allowed me to actually complete a book that I had been working on for 20 years about my experience in having these gifts and these profound opportunities and experiences, but not really knowing how to move through them. And so it's like that moment in time was so profound because it gave me permission to be who I was, to be who I am. And so it opened up the floodgates, because I don't just talk about that experience now. I talk about all the weird stuff, all of the, you know, ahas and epiphanies, all of the things now. And I'm no longer wrapped up in this fear about the judgment that comes with that. I know that there will be people that resonate and there'll be people that don't, and that's okay. But I know that this is part of my mission, to share this story, to share these messages with people, because it's part of that beautiful purpose, my God-given purpose, to share my stories with the world, to share my light with the world, however that might be. So one of the really interesting things about, you know, speaking up and speaking our truth is that there's so much that can hold us back. You know, you might have heard the saying that shame breeds in silence. You know, so does anger, so does resentment, so do all of these other denser, or how we perceive them as low vibration energies, right? That's, you know, they breed in that space. But when we allow them to come to the surface, to be lifted, not only does it create liberation for us, but it also gives permission for other people to do the same, for them to also be free. And that's one of the most powerful pieces of me expressing this story, is I hope that it gives others permission for them to speak their truth and for them to be their true, authentic human soul that they are.
Beautiful, and beautifully said. Thank you. And you know, when we're talking about sharing those things that are near and dear to us, whether it's painful or an illumination, yeah. also share our joy. There's a lot mm-hmm. of people that hold joy down. They're afraid to even smile at someone in public.
Yes. Yes.
When we hold joy in too much, it dies. When yeah. we let joy out, it grows, it expands. Yeah. And that's yes. what we want more of. So absolutely.
I love that you brought that in, because one of my tools for people when they're like, I don't feel like, how do I tune into heaven? I just tell people, put a smile on your face and see what happens. You know, that's so like, it's actually that simple, you know, like yeah. you don't even realize you're driving in your car and you realize that, you know, you've got the scowl on your face, you know, and I'll catch myself and then I'll just put a smile on. And then all of a sudden I notice someone in another car sees me and now they're smiling, you know, they don't know what I'm smiling about, but it's just like, it's like a yawn, right? It just triggers this ripple effect. And so it's really that simple. It's just leaning into that little bit of joy space. And all of a sudden you will find more joy. So if we're willing to just lean into those energies that we are craving, just lean in a little bit. And all of a sudden you'll see that you've opened the floodgates to something so much more.
Ah, thank you. Beautiful. And before we close, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your book, because your book is pretty new. So it I would love is. To have you share that with our listeners.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, it's just still in the pre-launch phase, but it is available on Amazon. And so the book is called The Arc, A-R-C. And it's the story, it is based on my near-death experiences and my spiritual journey. But when I was writing it, you know, Spirit really said, this is the book of the world. It's not your story. And so I shifted that book to be more of a fantasy fiction through the eyes of a beautiful character named Celeste. And so she struggles with these intuitive gifts and she feels like they're curses and, you know, is trying to figure life out. And then she ends up having a near death in which she goes to what you can describe as maybe a heavenly place, but it's the realm of the angels. And so she goes and she meets her guardian angels and she builds these relationships and she has these profound experiences and these teachings to remind her who she is. So my hope with this book is that as people read it, they remember who they are and they start tuning into that beautiful heavenly frequency. And it is book one of three. So yes, indeed, there are more books coming as well. So we're already halfway through book number two. And so that will be coming out next year as well. So yes, indeed, if you feel called, that book, like I said, it's available on Amazon. You can find it.
And it's called The Arc.
The Arc.
That's A-R-C. Right. So
yes,
look for her book on Amazon. I certainly
Thank
will.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we do have a little gift. I do a 7 days of creation in January. And so we'll make sure that that link is in the show notes as well. It's 7 days with me. And we just talk about much of the similar things that we talked about today, but with a bit more depth. And so it's a beautiful week to start your 2025 year off in.
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure and an honor. And I look forward to doing this again with you sometime and reading your book.
I would love that, Meg. Thank you so much. It's been an honor for me as well. I've loved our conversation and the gentleness of it. So thank you for the grace that you bring to the rest of us as well.
Hey, listeners, thank you so much for being part of the Soul Speak world. I really appreciate that. And if you're willing and if you find this of value, would you please follow on any of the platforms you're listening to, whether that's Apple or Spotify or Google or any of the platforms. And of course, I love the ratings if you find this valuable. You can also follow me on YouTube and like and share. And all of that really makes a difference. Appreciate your participation. And of course, I really appreciate you being part of this world.